This is the Secular Foxhole Podcast. Today, Martin and I have a returning guest. Vinay Kolhatkar is an Australian freelance journalist, novelist, screenwriter, and finance professional. He is the chief editor of The Savvy Street, an public intellectual e-zine committed to liberty and individualism. Vinay has authored a TV pilot screenplay, Undercover, the story of Jamila, and two cinematic thrillers, A Sharia London and The Frankenstein Candidate. He is also the co-author of Media Wars, The Battle to Shape Our Minds, which delves into how and why fascism is taking over the West, and probably a good segue into what has happened in Australia and New Zealand over the last 90 days. I think it's just been, your lockdowns have been lifted, but we saw some horror stories there, Vinay. Can you delve into some of those?
Sure, we can. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome.
So good afternoon to you, Blair, and good evening to Martin.
Good morning.
So we're in three different three different time zones here.
I know. So is it morning for you?
Yeah, between 7:30 and 8 in the morning on Saturday. So we're almost always a day ahead of everyone else, and night in Sweden and late afternoon. So when it comes to Australia, I was going to write this article, which I was going to call "Is Australia Becoming Authoritarian?" And I was going to answer that in the affirmative. And I would still, except for one thing that kind of I thought about yesterday, in fact, as I began to how we should present this, because there has been quite a lot of very selective presentation, even by the right-wing media, on this issue of lockdowns. So, yes, the short answer is the entire world has moved towards China.
Yes.
In the last 2 years. So officially, 1 December 2019 was the first time somebody presented in a Chinese hospital with COVID-like symptoms. The Hong Kong-based South China Morning Post says, no, this was a lot earlier. According to them, it happened in November. But we're sort of 2 years into the pandemic, and pretty much every country on earth has become more totalitarian and gone towards, you know, the distance between the West and China is decreasing. And I wish it was China moving towards the West, but it's the other way around. So every state, every nation state has become more authoritarian. And there has been some very specific problems in Australia and New Zealand. And what I want to stress is the foundation rather than the visuals.
Okay.
So in the American media, I believe you're getting visuals, YouTube videos, people protesting, and they're being beaten up by the riot police. They're being charged by police on mounted horses or batons, and they are getting hurt. They are getting fined heavily. And yes, that's all true, but a selective, and it's true also in a lot of protests in Europe as well, as I believe. I've seen some videos of that. And no doubt there have been some protests and there have been a lot of riots, in fact, in the United States, some of them unrelated to the pandemic.
Correct.
So the primary defect in Australia, I'll stick to Australia for the time being, is that we are the only liberal democracy in the world who doesn't have anything resembling a Bill of Rights or a charter of what they call a Charter of Human Rights. So the United States obviously does have a Bill of Rights. So does Canada, in the UK, New Zealand, even I believe Singapore, even India and Iraq and even Turkey, Iraq and Turkey included in that list, have some sort of a... Yes.
Can I interrupt you? You don't have any link because you have heritage to United Kingdom and the British Empire with, you know, Magna Carta or something like that?
Yes, the Magna Carta is definitely a link, and the Australian Constitution guarantees are basically five rights, and that includes the right to vote, the right to a trial by jury, which I think is not present in some of the Asian countries like India, the right to not suffer religious discrimination, and freedom of religion and the right to not suffer discrimination by the origin of state, because Australia also is a federalist nation state like the United States and Canada. Mm-hmm. But there is no right to freedom, freedom of speech. So, and also, sorry, there is a right to the fifth one is a right to property compensation. So you don't have the right to prevent your property being acquired by the Crown. But should the Crown acquire it, they must give you just compensation.
Oh, fair.
Okay. So that is the big defect. But what we have seen over the last 2 years, and as we said, authoritarianism has increased. And the reason for that is a defect that is present across the entire Western world. And let's come to that now, which is why my answer is in the affirmative for all of the West. So what we don't have in the UK and New Zealand, but what we have in the US, Canada, Australia, in India is a federal nation state. So federation of states have got together. And in India, it's kind of a strange animal because the union dominates the states, but not so in Australia and the United States and Canada. Normally, always rather than normally, the libertarians rejoice in federalism. They say, oh, good to have decentralization. But let's go to the United States now. One of the problems we have is that the states have certain rights, includes emergency powers to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. And I believe that's enshrined in the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as well as what the American Bar Association says is 200 years of legal precedent. So they cite this 1902 case, which is more than 100 years ago, in Louisiana. So it was the port of New Orleans, which was infected with disease. And instead of putting a positive obligation on the port, which would be rational to have a placard or a board up there saying, you know, beware, don't come here. This is infested with whatever it is.
Yeah.
Asking them to put out a notice and letting the free, healthy people choose whether they still want to take the risk of working at the port of New Orleans or visiting it or going there as a tourist. The state put an obligation on healthy people, preventing them from entering the port, and the Louisiana Supreme Court upheld that. So we've had 200 years of precedent where the states can exercise emergency powers to prevent all sorts of movement, rights to work, the rights we take for granted, and they may be even enshrined in some way in the Constitution. And that's what has allowed a lot of European states and even the United States to have all sorts of mandates, lockdowns, businesses, closures, vaccination mandates, the mandates to wear masks when inside and even outside, and 2 square meter rules, all sorts of things have happened, which have indeed happened here as well. And most recently, the state of Victoria passed a bill, so it's become law, which is called the Pandemic Bill. And these state powers were vested in the chief health officer, and they've been transferred to the premier, which is like the governor. Mm-hmm. People think that's incredibly unfortunate, and there were a lot of protests against that too. But in sort of my thinking, it's neither here nor there, because the sort of argument was that the politician shouldn't have that much power. Of course, they shouldn't. Neither should anyone designated as the chief health officer, you know, which is worse, kind of, because it's an unelected bureaucrat. And we know that the so-called chief health officers are anything but independent anyway. Mm. So them having that power was kind of worse, because the politicians, the governors, the premiers hid behind the chief health officer's skirts, and they said, oh, no, but it's not us. That's the advice we're getting. And that's why we're introducing a lockdown or mask mandate or vaccination mandate. Mm-hmm. So we have this situation where virtually the entire West, I would say, this is the reason, is at risk, because we have enshrined that law, the power to prevent infectious diseases located in emergency powers. and it's being exercised to a degree which had never been the case before. And especially it is being exercised against a disease which arguably with Omicron is getting perhaps more infectious but less deadly. A lot of coronaviruses have ended up causing only a common cold. So we had a lot better solutions than, you know, what has been actually imposed on us.
Agreed. Yeah, it's the same here in the States. I mean, there's been, the media is absolutely one-sided in favor of whatever, you know, the president or, you know, the governors here say to do. And it's always been, they always extend the emergency powers of the governors for each state, or I think there's only like two states that have, you know, not extended those kind of emergency powers. The way you described it is everyone's lurking, you know, moving towards China instead of China moving towards freedom. That's a perfect summary. Hopefully that trend can be reversed, but it's only through ideas. And when you have the media and right now, I guess, big tech all on board.
Indeed, you have a big sort of crony nest of pharma, big tech, and what we call the deep state, a bunch of unelected bureaucrats, the intelligence agencies, a whole range of associations. For instance, there's a joint release by the American Medical Association, the American Pharmacists Association, and the American Society of Health Systems Pharmacists, and that condemns ivermectin as a possible remedy for COVID or as a prophylactic. And in general, the establishment has everywhere has been not in support of any alternate treatments. And, you know, I noticed there was a news in NBC that Dr. Mary Bowden, she's an ENT at Houston Methodist Hospital, was suspended because on her social media account, she touted as ivermectin, you know, potential therapeutic use against COVID. And at NBC, when they reported it, they put her in the same box as Dr. Sue McIntosh, who lost her medical license because of faking vaccination certificates. Now, those two things are entirely different. One is are doing some fakery, maybe for the right reasons, but that's a completely different thing. A fraud is completely different to expressing a medical opinion. And we have a big problem here in Australia where the equivalent of the FDA is called TGA, the Therapeutics Goods Administration. And some doctors say they have been issuing directives, is the word they use. So if you ask me, they should have no right to even provide guidance unless asked for. And the equivalent of the FDA and CDC in Australia has done everything it can to prevent the doctor-patient relationship in respect of COVID from working normally. And in a variety of states in the United States also, and in European nation states, it's been the same thing's been happening, is my belief. In Sweden, used to be touted, Martin, as the exception to the lockdown rule. So, but I don't know where they are. Like, can you go to a doctor and you and your doctor decide what treatment you should have? Or if someone comes down with COVID, it's only the state decides. You get no treatment for several days. You're isolated at home. And then if you're hospitalized, they decide they do with you in the hospital.
It's not so strict, and Blair and I have discussed it, but if you know that you have some kind of disease that could be deadly or could, you know, affect others, then you should take care of that, I think. But I think we should prevent it in different ways and also have a free of information, flow of information. So in a way, I like how so-called they have handled it here in Sweden, but as you say, they are hiding behind the skirts. So this agency have, when it went well, so to speak, they could talk and have a press conference and so on. But then they start seeing a pattern, and then they were not so popular anymore, and then the politicians did a new thing. But we have never had a real lockdown. But in September, they said everything is free. So now you could have party, now you could have big events.
Gatherings,
and so on.
Whatever.
Yeah, and what happened then, of course. And now we see this new version. So it's going back and forth the whole time. But we don't have any, you have to wear mask and what not. But it's still these distances and other things like that.
So that's relatively mild, the social distancing, 2-square, 4-square meter rules, yeah, and stuff like that. They're hard to administer and monitor anyway.
Yeah, but I think we should focus on, as I said, we don't want to be conspiracy theorists here, but you said this about China. I read in the Deutsche Welle, I think it was, early on, about Wuhan, about the bats, and now I saw on a documentary, like a science here on the telly, they talked about how the bats was transferred to some animal and then to the people, to humans. And also COVID have been in different variations have been during the history, but it have been very silenced in a way, and that's I wonder about.
Absolutely.
So we should talk more about that. Learn from what's happened there in Wuhan and China, and also protect us for the future, and also but also see the risks, of course. But don't take the chance that it will be the Big Brother and the lockdown, because think about all the businesses that have lost lots of money over this and other things like that. But you shouldn't be do dangerous thing, and you shouldn't do stupid things. It's that's the thing here in Sweden. I've been there, but now they said in September, now it's free to meet and have gatherings, big gatherings. And then what happened? Then it peaked again. And I think in a way we have to live with it for rest for a long foreseen future. And maybe we'll learn something from it. But I don't like the demands, and I don't like how we all the trust, so to speak, in this agency with the bureaucrats, and definitely not see how the politicians see their chance to really lock down. But on the other hand, I'm happy that Sweden haven't locked down totally. Personally, I would say that that's not a good idea. And right now, before we start recording, I saw on Jon Galt Line, the Facebook group there, it was some British, I think, journalists that have interviewed somebody in Australia, a private individual that had a negative test, but she was set in not house arrest, it was more like a camp. And then she was fined, she could be fined lots of money if she walked outside. And I thought that was horrendous and very scary.
The fines here are quite horrendous. I think we probably lead the world on fines that are just astronomical.
But here in Sweden, with lots of with language and to get the information out. When they saw, you know, in different areas that the information was not going out about COVID and how you could protect yourself and about the vaccine and other things like that.
We should talk about the vaccines and the protections they offer and a fair bit of research here. And I wanted to draw a parallel with this index that the Heritage Foundation publishes, and it's quite famous around the world. It's been happening for quite a number of years. It's called Index of Economic Freedom. Yep. And they judge nation states by your freedom to work, produce, consume, invest freely, free flow of labor, capital, goods, and the affirmation of property rights. Now, Hong Kong rates number one, but that doesn't count as a nation. So in the nation ranking, Singapore is number one, New Zealand number two, and Australia number three. What surprised me is in 2021, it's still New Zealand number two and Australia number three. The United States is 20th. The United Kingdom is 7th. China is 107 and India is 121. Now, and a lot of the Southern American countries on the continent are down in the three figures.
Okay.
But I wonder if we could compute an index of medical freedom and the whole thing would be reversed. And by that, I mean, yes, you should be able to offer a vaccine without going through a 5-year process, but it should be based on free consent and full information. So it's an informed consent.
You should
consent.
Pay for it in one way or another also.
Sure. It shouldn't be free. It should not be pushed down your throat. And you should be able to consult the medical professionals of your choice. Now, we have heard of and talked about ivermectin, but there's also theory that H2O2 vapors help. There is a pulmonologist in India who has been getting phenomenal results with an alternate treatment that has made it into the journals, but it's simply not being publicized to that extent. And again, it's a drug that's been around for over 100 years. So these treatments people should be able to access. And with vaccines, there was a denial of the after effects that were occurring, and the vaccine ended up becoming like a reverse lottery. So in a normal lottery, it's like everybody spends $5 and somebody wins $1 million. And we don't criticize or envy the person who wins $1 million. We don't miss $5 when we lose them. But if it was reverse, if it was like somebody becomes bankrupt and loses $1 million, but everybody gains $5, and that would be a reverse lottery. So everybody who has taken a vaccine, I believe, is now, excluding perhaps Omicron, has much better immunity in terms of hospitalization rates, and death rates are a lot less among the vaccinated. But there were some who died. Lisa Shaw, the BBC presenter, died. There were people who got myocarditis and pericarditis, heart inflammation among the young. There were women whose periods have changed simply after the first dose of a vaccine. And those are very highly frequent cases. And there was this breakthrough, which was the entire world media, except again, the South Korea Herald and the Times of India, the entire world has been silent on that, because all the vaccine manufacturers said that the injection should be given in the muscle. So it's in the deltoid muscle typically. It's a large muscle with very low risk of hitting a blood vessel. But what doctors and nurses are trained to do is to aspirate before vaccinate, when the recommendation is for the vaccine to be given in the muscle. And that means when they inject, when they insert the needle, they pull it back and check if there's any blood coming. If there is, they've hit a blood vessel, they'll pull it out, discard the needle, start again. And that happens fairly rarely, that when they're aspirating, they discover that they've hit a blood vessel. But if they don't aspirate, they would never know if they've hit a blood vessel or not. And unfortunately, across all of these vaccination centers, aspiration simply hasn't been asked for, because they say, oh, it's highly unlikely there are no major blood vessels. But highly unlikely is simply not good enough, because these vaccines are very different. Both the adenovirus AstraZeneca vaccine and the mRNA vaccines like Moderna and Pfizer essentially instruct your body to make spike proteins. So they're making a key element of the disease rather than replicating the disease by giving you a weak virus or an attenuated virus or a dead virus. So the body then makes spike proteins, and then the body makes antibodies against the spike protein, which help against hospitalization and death if you get the real spike protein into you. And that comes with other things. So that the other problem with the vaccines is the efficacy starts to drop after 6 months. But so if you inject in a blood vessel, then the instructions are traveling across the body, as against localized primarily in the deltoid muscle, where the spike protein happens, the antibodies happen, and then the antibodies travel around the body. Only the antibodies ought to travel, not instructions to make spike protein shouldn't go all over the place. So there is a study done on rats where two groups and a bunch of rats were injected deliberately into the vein, the same sort of Pfizer and Moderna style mRNA, or it might have been the adenovirus AstraZeneca vaccine, and then a bunch of rats were given the vaccine in the muscle. So there were some cases of heart inflammation developed. Sorry, it was the mRNA vaccine. Heart inflammation did develop in the rats exclusively in the group that was given the IV, intravenously, the injection intravenously. So we may have a situation where the vaccines have been blamed a little bit unfairly, but then there has been negligence on the part of the administration, and they don't want to admit to that negligence. So they're just simply suppressing this whole idea, and which is incredibly bad, because some people have suffered a lot. And this is where, you know, the index of medical freedom comes in. You should be able to go to your doctor of your choice, which is what I did when you're taking a vaccine, and make sure that he aspirates before he vaccinates. I made sure I got that for myself, my wife, and my family, because, and then we didn't suffer any horrendous after effects. But that seems to be happening, strangely enough, in the third world. I mean, the You know, there's a combination of things, maybe losing our freedoms. In the third world, you can walk into a surgeon and get into a specialist or a physician and get prescribed ivermectin. It was widely prescribed by the state government of Uttar Pradesh. But the state of Maharashtra suddenly introduced a travel restriction on a bunch of countries, including the whole of the EU, because of Omicron. And surprisingly, the central government there, as well as even the WHO and the United Nations, have been criticizing the travel bans because they say they are unfair. You know, we ought to distribute the disease fairly. And, which is like, and this is where Australia becomes quite an interesting case, because you look at the, let's look at the statistics now. The world deaths are on 5,263,000 cases. Now, let's compare the deaths per millions. Average is 663. The United States is about that, 2,389. The United Kingdom's 2,134. New Zealand is 44. Australia, 78. So pretty much at the other end of the scale. India is 337. Now, you put the focus more on Australia again, what do you find? Pretty high vaccination rates here now, but an astonishing difference by state. So out on the west coast, we have Western Australia, and they're quite isolated. It takes 4 or 5 hours by flight to get there from Sydney. It's a big time zone difference as well. And they practically have been able to prevent cases by lockdowns and travel bans. And the travel bans have enabled them not to have lockdowns. But then there is some freedom being infringed anyway. The travel ban is an infringement. Federal government in Australia have been criticizing Tasmania and Western Australia for what they're doing is isolating themselves. But their isolation has resulted in hardly any lockdowns. People are freely able to move around. And now the active cases in New South Wales are 2,900 a day. Our average Victoria is almost 13,000 a day. Western Australia is two active cases. Tasmania is one. New cases in Tasmania, zero cases to date since the pandemic started, 238. So even when you compare it on a per thousand rate, population rate, it's very dramatically less than in other states. Now, but they have done so with a different kind of infringement. But it still, I guess, is preferable to beating people on the street who are protesting, living normally otherwise.
Yeah. Two things. I blame myself for not, I heard this story and I should have researched it, and I will still do that. But Dr. Fauci himself visited this lab, and U.S. taxpayer money went to this lab for this COVID thing before, you know, blew up, if you will.
So this is the Wuhan lab we're talking about?
Yeah, the Wuhan lab, yes. And I think that is just, you know, an abomination, to be polite.
Well, but the United States government, we understand, funded the lab as well.
Probably, yes. Our taxpayer money
did, and it arguably the purpose was to, I mean, it's very ironical. It's what they call the gain of function research. So you actually make a virus, a new form of virus, make it more virulent so that it'll enable us to have vaccines and, you know, other treatments should a pandemic occur. But ironically, that resulted in the pandemic occurring because there was a leak from the lab. Now, the benign story is the one of ignorance, mm-hmm. and therefore an inadvertent release. But the sinister story, obviously, is one that's a bioweapon.
Yes.
Even the vulnerability that I mentioned, even in the U.S., despite the constitutional protections and the Bill of Rights, the states have emergency powers to do all sorts of things that we are looking at today, you know, prevent businesses from opening and lockdowns and prevent movement of people, lock up healthy people, in fact. And that had never been done in human history before, except for those, you know, isolated incidents that we spoke about, not so endemically. Well, if you wanted to make a bioweapon or you wanted to make a weapon to make the world comply to kind of a new world order, this is the weapon one would think of, because you can exploit the rights given to the states under the emergency powers.
Right,
and it could well be that that has happened. It's possible. I mean, it's become rational to formulate conspiracy hypotheses. So the term conspiracy theory used to be used for a theory of a conspiracy, and the theory ranged from highly likely to mildly plausible to absurd, you know, the whole range.
Right, right.
Whereas now it's become a demeaning term of some wacko saying, well, I know the earth is flat or the moon is made of cheese or some such wild thing.
There is a Santa Claus, yes.
Yeah. And indeed, in fact, we are compelled to formulate conspiracy hypotheses to make sense of the world around us, because we can see the establishment and the media are suppressing every alternate explanation of virtually anything and everything related to this, especially related to the pandemic.
I'm sorry I interrupted you, but
no,
let me ask you this. Are you familiar with Claus or Klaus Schwartz or Schwartz?
Schwartz, you mean the president of the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset, yes.
I'm wondering if these things are related. This virus is released, and all of a sudden, the West, instead of, you know, standing by its principles, becomes lapdogs to this 30-year plan or 20-year plan of his. And again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but is it, you know, on the scale of possible, probable, certain, it's possible.
Oh, it's entirely possible. And like, I think it's entirely rational. And we, on the Savvy Street, we discussed that actually in a video interview of David Harriman. You obviously know of him.
I watched that interview, yes.
Yeah, and well, we get a range of conspiracy, thank you. We get a range of conspiracy hypotheses, as we call them, to avoid the term that's become so maligned today, the conspiracy theory. And also the fact is, from a scientific standpoint, a theory is a much stronger body of interrelated data and evidence that has piled up into a theory, that sometimes a theory is something like a fact. Like theory of gravity is still called a theory, but it's a fact. The theory of evolution is a fact.
Yes, true.
It's still called a theory. Whereas a hypothesis is clearly a conjecture that is put up for observation and discussion. And ideally, even the proponent of that hypothesis should be open to it being wrong. But we haven't been able to examine the origin of the virus, the outcome, it is entirely possible that it was released as a bioweapon with some aims, or it is also possible. Well, the second part is more than possible. I mean, Schwab himself says so, that the pandemic is an opportunity. So even if it was an inadvertent release by the Wuhan lab, they've certainly taken advantage of it. And that they more than readily admit, they admit so in print on their own website.
Yes. And again, the other thing I wanted to stress, for many years, I've lamented what I call the permanent bureaucracy, which exists to serve itself and not answer to the people. And I think the administrative state is, that is what the administrative state is. It's this permanent bureaucracy that you can't, monolith or leviathan that just keeps growing and feeding itself. What do you think of that? That's becoming worldwide.
I notice we called it the deep state. In my definition, it includes academia, media, think tanks. Philanthropy has gone in that direction. And unfortunately, a lot of large corporates, a lot of money is pouring in even from corporates, buying into the whole climate scam and a variety of other scams, because big corporations are assisted by this cronyist fascist state. And that's where the sort of philanthropy and big corporations is where the money's coming from. So we have this network, which is, we call it deep state, and it's controlling pretty much all the mainstream media, maybe over 90% of academia.
Easily 90% of academia,
Over 90% of think tanks as well.
Sure.
And these kind of NGO type organizations. And they become so powerful. I mean, to digress from COVID, but staying on Australia for a minute again, because we said that would be our focus today.
Okay.
We had this interesting thing happen here. In 2009, there was a gentleman by the name of Tony Abbott. He was a politician. He was in regional Victoria, and he said, all this climate thing is absolute crap. Those were the words he used, absolute crap, but in a private meeting. Some years later, in 2013, he became prime minister. And then all of a sudden, he was playing games. He was dog whistling to his constituency, but he could never confront the what you would call climate alarmism, or what Candace DeRussy in 2009 called climate Scientology. He could not confront climate Scientologists or the media supporting them directly. Same thing happened, a gentleman by the name of Scott Morrison. He was treasurer in 2017, February, so 4.5 years ago. He brought a lump of coal into parliament, did not allow to have a prop, but he nevertheless brought it and showed it, and he said, don't be afraid, this is just coal. And he accused the opposition of coalophobia. He called it a pathological fear of coal. It was a beautiful speech. But then when he becomes prime minister, he became prime minister, recently he went to Glasgow. And once again, what he has done is played games and agreed to some wishy-washy targets instead of any head-on confrontation. So even Donald Trump wasn't a complete exception, because when he became president, he asked the Department of Energy for a list of people who attended the climate conferences, five-star junkets. So they refused. You know, the Department of Energy, the Department of Agriculture, NASA, everybody worked in unison against Trump. So yes, he pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Accord, but he didn't confront the scam hit on by saying it is this climate thing is a scam. It's climate alarmism is a scam. And so I am thinking the deep state is so powerful that, and the politicians depend on campaign money to such a large extent that within the party, there's quite a bit of revolt. And especially in parliamentary democracies, if a prime minister was to confront it, he would get a revolt internally and he would be deposed by his own party, which can happen. And of course, even in the US, while, you know, the Republican Party can't pose Trump for simply disagreeing with him on policy matters, there is still a very strong influence that the deep state has over what the president can do. And then, of course, we know in the pandemic, what happened was Trump refused to exercise some of the powers he did have. But he could not stop the respective states from exercising them, which is the flaw we have in the model of federalism that has been exploited virtually perfectly by the Great Reset proponents, if indeed it's deliberate, or even if it is an opportunistic and very vigorous opportunistic reaction to what has happened.
Vinay, two points before we wrap up. We probably will come back to, as I would call it, environmentalism as the new religion here at the Secular Foxhole, and talk more about that and cover that. And also, if you would like a cliffhanger for an upcoming and returning guest, what do you see as a solution, or how could we spread the good word about your work and so on? What's going on down under?
Thank you. Well, this is a very difficult question, because we are stymied by law, and we got to have law to protect ourselves from law. Or rather, we got to have an enshrined right at in a constitution to protect ourselves from lawmakers making new laws. But even in the U.S., regulation circumvents that process.
Yep.
And so we're not able to amend, we're not able to amend constitutions. So what we have to do is wake people up, and hopefully, you know, that starts to spread the word and we elect the right sort of people into office. But it's a long, hard struggle. I can see that. There's just so much.
Yeah, it's definitely a long
shot. So much is against us, unfortunately. So thank you for the sentiment, Martin, but I don't have any kind of magical solution other than speak up while we can, and as sort of media that are not major media, we fly, you know, Secular Foxhole and Savvy Street flies well under the radar. But those that become big, like, you know, YouTube was alternate media when it first started.
Right.
And now it's been co-opted into the deep state. So that would be the danger for media that become bigger, as to where the money is coming from to make it bigger and how it's going to prevent itself from being co-opted into the deep state.
Yeah, and we have some ideas for Blair and myself. I mean, we are not there yet because we have to get the funds and have a budget and support. But for example, one alternative could be Rumble. I've tested to upload one video there. Took some time and so on, but I'm looking at that. Amy Peacock, she recently did that with Blair and I. We have this new segment sometimes. Some mm-hmm. good things, some not so good thing, and then some ending with some good things. And that's originated by Amy Peacock. And she, the latest live streaming she had, it was on a new segment, some positive things about the treatment against diabetes. And then she said that it was live streaming located on Rumble. So that's something to look up for the future. But you have to have, if you want to do live stream, you have to have a certain account, and then you have to have funds for that. But I see if a market will work freely, we will see alternatives. But it's good to, as you said, point out that how some alternative or some startups is emerging or morphed into this big tech that is not for free market, it's something else. And that's why, you know, all about COVID thing, if you wanted to post something on Facebook and they say, are you really sure that you want to post this kind of information, you know, this post? This is starting getting a bit scary. It's this big brother watching you over there. But then you could vote with your wallet and pocketbook and go somewhere elsewhere. So
definitely Rumble and Odyssey are, from what I've heard, are probably the freest of the new competitors to YouTube and are posting the most alternate narrative.
Yes, I think that's true, yes.
Yeah. And that's why we're having you continue with our podcast. We could be corrected and we could be having a discourse and debate and discussion. But I like it. It's pretty hard. Maybe you shouldn't say that out loud, but it's pretty hard to close down an RSS feed. You could be deplatformed, you could be stopped or picked out. But still, even real conspiracy theorists are still out there because they have saved their RSS feed. And I don't like them, but I'm for the freedom of expression also. But they have to take the consequences of what they are spreading and be responsible for that. But if you have an RSS feed and have you could protect it pretty easily. And what we want to do in the future is to get support by fellow podcasters and listeners by something called Podcasting 2.0. And that's an initiative from folks at podcastindex.org. And there it's something called Satoshi, and that's like 100 million parts of a Bitcoin, so it's a small amount. But then you could stream Satoshis through by listening to a podcast if you use a Podcasting 2.0 application. So there I see it. But right now I think it's a couple of thousands of podcasters of like 4 million podcasts all over the world using this. But you could look in the crystal ball. So in 10 years' time, when we talk again.
Fantastic. I was about to call it the, when you mentioned it yourself, I was about to call it the Bitcoin of sound or the Bitcoin of free expression. Is sound preserved in disaggregated ledger type entities, or you're calling podcast 2.0, so you cannot be deplatformed, you cannot be taken out, hopefully, and cannot be prevented from being listened to. But one of the problems we've had is even where people have been, going back to the pandemic, have been protesting in Greece, they recently passed a law making vaccination compulsory for people about 60, and they've been in Australia. The protests were met with violence from the police, but where they weren't met with violence from the police in France and Germany, the nation state still went ahead as if the protests hadn't happened and legislated the way they wanted to. So, despite the expression, the alternate media is simply not large enough to sway significant amount of opinion yet. And hopefully we will be.
Some days, I know we will be. I want to end on a positive note, though, if I may. One of my favorite movies of all time came out of Australia. It was called The Dish with Sam Neill.
All right. I must confess I haven't seen it, but go on.
It's it takes place in the 1960s when the United States put a satellite dish for NASA in this big sheep field in the middle of some prairie land in Australia. And it was about the three guys that manned this satellite station and the town around it. And it's a classic, feel-good, wonderful film. So I highly recommend that to you and to our listeners. And so anyway, we've been talking to Vinay Kolhatkar, who's always welcome to come to the show. And we thank him again for manning the foxhole with us today. And,
thank you for having me again.
Yeah, and Vinay, as an ending, if you have any ending note or if you want to say where the listeners could find you in cyberspace, you're more than welcome.
Thank you. I mean, well, yeah, I hope listeners find us, the Secular Foxhole Podcast, and us, Savvy Street, by visiting our websites and at least keeping us alive. And ideally, we're both looking for major sponsors who take us to the next step where it's still fly under the radar, but a little bit bigger. We drop a few bombs by
far. That's right.
The moment we're throwing stones, and then we hopefully we get some machine guns, and then maybe we fly on the radar and drop a few bombs on the establishment. We're not afraid to speak truth to power, but we need a bigger platform, that's for sure.
That's right.
And as Blair knows, without saying anything now, I have some ideas and I've been talking with some interesting entrepreneurs about that. So we will probably come back to that, Vinay.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right, sir. That's a wrap, I believe.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, Vinay, we appreciate you coming on again.